The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Monday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course, SiriusXM channel 158. It's Gil Alexander. It's my little buddy Kelly Bidlin, everybody. Losing weight.
Hey.
For our eyes. What a glorious Monday morning it is, Kelly.
It is.
Wes Reynolds will join us to talk Masters and perhaps PGA moving forward. Also, whatever else is on his mind, sports betting-wise. Paul Sporer on Major League Baseball. And Carl Sack with the NBA playoffs. Now we're on the cusp of the play-in games, specifically Tuesday and Wednesday. Also Friday as well, before we head into the real playoffs beginning this weekend. He'll have projected series prices, what he would have had the numbers at, what they are currently in the 3-6 and 4-5 series that are already set. Does he have any plays in the play-in games? We'll get into all that. Kelly's thoughts on those as well.
I made a couple bets.
Already?
Yeah.
Okay.
Bets, yep.
All right. We'll get into that. Some NFL draft stuff as well. I don't know if you know this. Special numbers game investigation reveals that the NFL draft is 10 days away. 10! Can you believe that?
And nobody has any idea where Shedeur Sanders will be drafted.
Nobody has any clue. It's a little earlier this year than normal. Usually like, you know, the 28th, the 29th.
I thought the same thing. Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
Creeping up a little. It's in Green Bay in 10 days. Okay. But first, oh, what a weekend it was. The 89th Masters, Rory McIlroy, your winner.
Yeah.
A birdie on the playoff hole, the 18th hole. Playoff against Justin Rose. I'm sorry to the JVTs of the world who had Justin Rose at 100-1. I know our buddy Brady Cannon, the founder of the Long Shots podcast, had him at 115-1.
I did not realize until the last few holes, I didn't realize how many people were on Justin Rose for this tournament.
There's a bunch. For us, Kelly, though, it ends up being fantastic.
Let's go. Especially you, man, with double downing on Friday and stuff.
Yeah, it's easy. You know, it's funny. That's one of those things also that on a Monday morning when people find out you had Rory and then you double down on Friday, it's very easy to sort of be like, oh, yeah, well, Rory, I mean, he's great. Of course you did. But Friday morning, I came in here. We talked about this on a numbers game. So I had him plus 750 and plus 725 preflop. And then Friday morning, I just remember he was coming off the 72 even par first round. Where he just absolutely crapped the bed in on 15 and 17.
Yep.
I believe that's the technical term. And he was, at that point, he was, what, 6 strokes behind Justin Rose, if I'm not mistaken?
Sounds right.
Yeah, 6 strokes behind Justin Rose.
Although this weekend was a marathon. I don't remember anything that far back, Hill.
But I came in here, I'm like, I'm not going to let those two. Like, there's the narrative that this tournament is in his head. He's tried 10 times to win the career slam. He's not done it. There it is, 15 and 17, and I was like, I'm betting him again. 14-1, plus 1255 were a couple bets, and I also bet him for low round in round two at plus 1850. By the way, I also bet him for low round in round three at 16-1. That was a dead heat with Zach Johnson. He won the round two, low round outright. This ends up being the biggest golf tournament of my life.
It was awesome. I wanted to give you props. I mean, it was, look, I was on Rory. That was awesome. There's one thing to be on Rory. We walked in here Friday. There's one thing to be on Rory and not count him out. I wasn't counting him out after what happened at the end of Thursday. There was also, though, my Twitter timeline full of tweets of how could you possibly back this guy at Augusta? This is what he's going to do. He's going to lose it at the end. And Gil walks in here on Friday where nobody else did I see this. And it was low round of the day, and I'm going back in with another outright, man. So props to you, man. That was awesome. That was
very
well
done. I mean, first of all, let me just quote Will Hill yesterday. We were obviously on a group text exchange.
7 shots back. Thanks, Dave Ross.
7 shots back after Thursday. And Will said it best. He goes, after yesterday, imagine not liking sports. This was incredible yesterday. What drama. What a final round. Rory ends up, after shooting a 66, 6 under 66, both on Friday and Saturday, he comes into the final round, 2 up on Bryson DeChambeau. And he double bogeys. Rory comes right out and he double bogeys the par 4 first after getting in the fairway bunker. And right there, he's tied with Bryson after one hole. Then Bryson birdies the par 5 second while Rory has a messy par. DeChambeau's up one, literally 2 holes in. That's it. Turn of events. So it wasn't feeling that good right at that moment. But then it was the first change in the roller coaster, because on the par 4-3, Rory birdies it while Bryson bogeys it. A right to left putt for birdie missed long. Rory's up one again. And then on the fourth hole, Bryson bogeys after a tee shot goes wide left. Rory birdies it. Rory's up three after four. So he comes in up two. He's down a stroke after two holes. He's back up three after four. Fast forward to the ninth. Rory's still up three. The approach on the par four ninth puts both almost equidistant from the hole. Rory birdies it. Bryson bogeys it. Rory's up four on not only Bryson DeChambeau, but also Ludvig Åberg and Justin Rose. And that's when Jim Nance on the turn says, "Is it nine holes to glory for Rory?"
I thought
the first Nanceism of the day.
Yeah, I also thought that one though was a look. Maybe no. It's not just being a better with a ticket, because obviously we saw it played out. I was not counting my money yet, Gil. Are you kidding me? With those names that were behind,
No one was counting yet. But after let's go to the 11th. Rory's still up four on Rose, five on Bryson. Bryson is kind of this is where Bryson begs out right here on the 11th. Rory's a few inches away from being wet on the par 4 11th. Remember that one that was trickling towards the water and stopped? And then Bryson goes right into the water. Rory ends up bogeying it, but Bryson double bogeys it. So Rory's up four on Rose, and Bryson's kind of done. So his competitive portion of the day was over, Bryson's. But Rory's still up four, even after the near miss. And that, by the way, that's one of those holes where it doesn't go in the water. You're like, it's just his day, right? It's going to be Rory. So after Rory has a stress-free par on the par 4 12th, he's up four on Rose and Åberg. Then he's up three on Rose, because Rose, all of a sudden, quietly in the background, not pictured on your screen, is starting a birdie fest. So they go to the 13th, the par 5 13th. Again, Rory's up three, comfortable. And he lays it up, because now he's in conservative mode, right? He's like, I got a three-stroke lead. He took a peek at the scoreboard. He puts it into the creek on his third shot, out of nowhere. And if he ends up losing this tournament, that's the shot they show in perpetuity, forever. He ends up double bogeying, and Rose, after he birdies 16, which is the fifth birdie for him in six holes, it is tied just like that. Just like that. Rory's got five holes to play. Par 4, 14th, Rory bogeys it after going in the straw when his putt stops on the lip. Rose, great chip onto the green on 17. Then he goes wide left on a three-footer. Remember, that's where Rose could have taken the lead, but he missed a little gimme putt. So it was a three-way tie at this point at 10 under. Rory, Rose, and Åberg. Did you think Ludvig was going to take it at this point? You have an inkling that he might do this?
Oh, yeah. I wasn't counting him out.
So they're tied at 10 under. Rose is through 17, Åberg through 15, Rory through 14, then Åberg ends up parring 16.
Actually, let me rephrase. I thought he was a much bigger threat than Justin Rose at that point.
So we go to the 15th, the par 5 15th, and this is the beginning of the how many great shots is Rory going to hit, and then how many putts is he going to blow? It's a three-way tie. Rory's second shot, 7-iron, over the water on the par 5 15th, giving him an eagle opportunity. Remember, he did the same thing with a 6-iron on Saturday. Nance proclaims shot of a lifetime, which I like when Nance does actually do stuff off the cuff. And then he misses the eagle opportunity, settles for birdie, but he gets the lead, right? He's up one on Rose with three to play for him. He's up two on Åberg, because Åberg bogeys 17. And then Åberg would go on and make a mess of 18. So that was the end of him. But Rory's up one. Three holes to play. Tremendous tee shot on the par 3 16th. But then Rose hits that long birdie putt on 18th out of nowhere to tie it at 11 under. And you're like, oh my God, I thought Rory was going to do this. Rory can't make the birdie putt on 16. He pars. We're tied at 11 under with two holes left for Rory. Rose is in the clubhouse. Two-stroke lead over the rest of the field. 17. Rory approach on 17. An even bigger shot of a lifetime with Rory egging the ball on to get over the trap and onto the green. Go, go. Birdies it. Rory's up one. One hole to play. Rory McIlroy's about to get the career grand slam.
Incredible shot.
18. He hits the approach into the bunker. You're like, okay. Well, it's not the worst chip. Chips it to about 7 feet from the pin. The putt for the tournament? Misses left. We're going to a playoff.
Ah!
Both at 11 under. Oh, my God.
I hedged off a bit. I know you didn't. Good on you, but...
Nope. 18-10, 18-10, 18-10. That's what you do in a playoff at Augusta. Sudden death, all of them. They go to 18. They both hit great tee shots. Rose, spectacular approach onto the green. Rory, an even better approach to within feet of the pin. Rose's putt just wide right, just pushed it wide. Rory to finish it off. Good. McIlroy wins the Masters. Here's Mike Tirico on the call. Okay, maybe not.
Yeah, we're not.
I thought we had Mike Tirico on the call. All right. Unbelievable. Jim Nance's call. The long journey is over. The long journey is over. McIlroy has his masterpiece. Now, Jim Nance will tell you that that was off the cuff, but he had masterpiece ready to go. Get it? Masterpiece. Piece of the career slam. Oh, he's so good. So clever. But canned and planned. Unbelievable. Just an unbelievable roller coaster of a round of golf. And I get back to what Will said, which is, imagine not liking sports. Forget if you had a bet on it. And then Rory breaks down emotional. Do you get a little misty on it all?
Oh, yeah.
I did.
It was awesome to see. Come on. This guy's been chasing this for 11 years. It's incredible.
Authentic reaction. Just an authentic reaction. Just the pouring out of emotions. He has his career slam. And as we move forward to Quail Hollow in the PGA, where he's won four times, ought he be the short shot?
Yeah, him and Scotty both 5-1 right now at DraftKings. We'll have to see how the next few weeks play out. But, man, wouldn't shock me, Gil. Wouldn't shock me. It's three wins this year.
There's a couple other takeaways from the Masters we have to get to. Things we need to file away for next year and years beyond. We'll get to that. And the NBA playoff series projected numbers. Next.
The Sports Betting Network.
Take your betting to the next level with First Bet. Whether it's Santa Anita, Gulfstream Park, or the road to the Kentucky Derby in Preakness, First Bet puts the action at your fingertips. Sign up now at firstbet.com. That's the number one, stbet.com. Use promo code VSIN200 to score a 20% rebate on all your wagers for the first 60 days, up to $200. Don't miss out. Bet smarter today at firstbet.com. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Always appreciate the feedback. Kevin Ryan, Grasshopper Gilly. You now know the full meaning of a golf sweat. Oh, trust me, I've bet golf before. I'm quite aware. But that was that was one of a kind yesterday.
That was one of a kind.
Brandon.
He won and lost the tournament like 16 times over Saturday.
It was
Sunday.
Amazing. Yeah, that's exactly right.
I've never seen so many great shots and so many terrible shots from one golfer in a big time moment.
His approaches at 15, I hope I get this right, 15, 17, and the playoff were the three shots of his life.
And then
in between, he would mess up the putts.
On the other hand, what was it, 13.
13 into the water, worst thing ever.
Where he lays up to play safe.
Yes.
And then into the water with one of the worst shots I've ever seen Rory McIlroy hit.
As we described in the opening segment. Like, if he loses the tournament, that's the shot they show forever. Brandon Kyles, underrated moment. Rory sticking with driver on the third after just missing the fairway on 1 and 2. Yes, could have easily conceded and hit 3-wood after Bryson found the fairway with his, but instead bombed the driver and birdied while Bryson bogeyed. Yes, Rory at that point was 1 back after two holes before that to start the round. He was up 2 holes. Rules for society. Nick, can you help me out with how the LIV guys qualify for majors? Fantastic weekend. Thanks. It's a combination of factors, one of which is if they won before there, right, Kelly?
Yeah, Master. I mean, if you ever win a Masters, you're invited back forever. And this is where when the LIV PGA Tour kind of separation occurred, the majors all tried to, like, play it down the middle, right? They didn't want to get involved. So, for these guys, it's a number of different ways. You could be top 50 world golf rankings, but remember, LIV is not picking up world golf rankings, so more of these guys will fall out of it, and you're going to see less and less as we go on. But yeah, it's past performance and past majors, Masters, that kind of stuff that are getting these guys in.
Roger Jones, well done, guys, on your Masters plays. I never could have played Rory. As I said, I wouldn't be sucked in by the experts talking about how well he was playing going in. I thought the pressure was too great and doubling down at better odds. Classic. And Scotty B726, is Scotty not saying a word after putting the green jacket on Rory the way it always has goes, or no low amateur either? So what he's referring to is in the Butler cabin. First, they do the Butler cabin thing, which is for the television audience, right? Yeah. Where Nance sits there and he's like, and now, right? My favorite one was when Fred Couples won. And he said to Fred Couples, you who went to the University of Houston, me who broadcasted at the University of Houston. And Couples is like, yeah, whatever, Jim. But so, yeah, in the Butler cabin, yeah, there was no low amateur, which is weird.
I don't know what that story was.
And then Scotty was just like, here you go, man.
But it's such an awkward item.
It's awkward because it's made for TV. The one that they didn't show yesterday, I don't think, which is the real one, is when they do it outside.
Yes.
So they do it all over again, which is for the patrons there at Augusta. And that went much better.
I don't know. I'm kind of over the Butler cabin. Like, it's felt like it should have been retired in 1978 or something.
You, a Houston graduate, me, an announcer at Houston.
Well, especially yesterday too. It's like I hate forced sportsmanship in sports where, like, they, you know, we make all these kids like shake hands after games after we want them to beat the crap out of each other on a football field or something in high school, right? Like Scottie Scheffler. I got to sit there and give this jacket to this guy. Like, well, I just played my ass off for 4 days trying to beat him.
It's Augusta. You going to do what we tell you to do. ladies and gentlemen, let's talk some Major League Baseball. Paul Sporer joins us now at Sporer on Twitter, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. How you doing, Paulie?
I'm doing well. How are you, Gil?
I'm good. Do you watch the Masters? Do you bet on the Masters? Do you do any of that?
I don't. I used to watch it a lot more. My dad was a big golf fan, so I would kind of keep up with it. I usually have a general idea of what's going on, but I was not dialed in this week.
A general idea. Let me ask you a couple of things about it. Let me go to the bottom of baseball. Let's start with the Rockies. The Rockies not only get swept by the Padres, they don't score a run. This is the first time since 2017 a team has failed to score a run in a series. They're 3-12 are the Rockies. It matches their worst start over 15 games in franchise history. They have a minus 44 run differential, which, if you projected it out, would be the worst run differential in the history of baseball. They've scored, let me just say this. They've scored 40 runs, and 19 of them have come in two games. I could go on, you understand. Worst whiff rate, the fewest batted balls. I guess my question is this: Have we determined in the off season debate of who will be the worst team, White Sox, Marlins, or Rockies? Have we landed on the worst team here?
Yeah, I think we have. You know, the Marlins are actually playing some inspired ball. They had the walk off wins against Pittsburgh. They're a game over 500. I still don't, you know, I don't think that they're any good or anything. And I've maintained that I think the White Sox will be regular bad this year, which is to say like a low 60s win team at the most. They'll get better as the season goes. I think the White Sox will, because of the prospects that they should be able to add. The Rockies, I mean, there's a reason that my colleague, and I believe your colleague, I believe he has a VSiN show, Jeff Erickson,
yes,
called them the Paste Eaters. And I picked that up from him, and I've always used it because it's so accurate. They don't know what the heck they're doing. You got 29 teams, and you got someone in the corner eating paste, and that's the Rockies. It is top down, man. They don't do anything right. They got a great stadium. They have some nice, loyal fans, and I feel bad for those fans. And that stadium, like I said, that place rules. Coors is awesome. Got to watch a couple games there a few years ago. Great place to watch ball. They suck. I mean, I cannot think of anything positive to go for with them. Even with the Marlins, I can at least come up with some positive things. You know, they got a Max Meyer coming. They got Sandy, at least for now, but they'll get trade capital for him. What can you say positively about the Rockies? You know, Chase Dolander's coming up. I guess that's the one thing. He and Veen. But why didn't Veen break camp? Now, would that have made them score a run this weekend? Probably not. But it's indicative of the constant failure of that organization. At every turn, they seem to make the wrong move. And again, that starts at the top and with ownership, not just with GM regime. And until that team is sold, I think the Rockies are going to continue to kind of face that. Uphill battle is an understatement. Well, what's way worse than an uphill battle? It's Sisyphus pushing up like five rocks up the hill. It sucks to be a Rockies fan, I'm sure.
Excellent Greek mythology reference, also coupled with eating paste in the corner. Well done.
Right.
Let me talk about a team. Okay, so I do these monthlies, right? I just started doing them last year. We won in June, a 25-1 and a 17-1 on the Astros. We came an out away from hitting a 65-1. This is the seventh go at it we've had. So we had the 6 months last year. So this is March, April, and I had the Twins. This is the worst of all my seven tries at this, right? The Twins are 5-11. 5-11, not too good, in the words of Steve Spurrier famously. They have a minus 13 run differential. Maybe they shouldn't be as bad as 5-11, but what's wrong with them? How have they sucked so bad early.
I'm a bit stunned on this one because I thought this was going to be a ball club that, you know, they had the collapse last year and they didn't do a whole lot in the offseason, but I understood with them. There were some teams that I didn't quite understand why they had a muted offseason. With the Twins, I understood it. I think they were still one of the best teams in this division. They're bringing back most of their talent. They've got good starting pitching with some depth. I'm a big David Festa and Zebby Matthews fan. I think both should be in the rotation right now over Chris Paddock and Simeon Woods Richardson. And of course, Pablo Lopez getting hurt brought Festa up. So then kick out one of the other guys and put Zebby there. But the offense has been anemic, and that's been a bit of a surprise to me too, is that they're just not hitting. They're just not playing well, and I don't know if there's some sort of malaise that has carried over from last year. It's really hard to say that. You had a whole offseason, winter and spring. I don't know why that would be the case. I just don't think that they're playing particularly well right now, and I don't have a lot of answers for them. Look at this team, there is still a lot of talent. You know, Royce Lewis got hurt again, but you got Buxton healthy. You got Edward Julian actually playing some solid ball. I'm a big fan of his, so I'm kind of excited that he's back up and playing. Wallner, Correa, Castro, Larnach, they've got talent. It's not like the deepest lineup or anything, but 1-9, they put out competent players there, and they're just playing like crap. Now, if they didn't have the collapse last year, and obviously your self-interest there with the bet, would we necessarily be making such a deal out of 5-11, even though it is a bad start for them? Probably not. But when you pair it with last year, it really does start to look bad. And I don't have great answers for them. They got a tough series against the Mets coming up. And I don't want to say it's must win because it's not. It's definitely not. But they got to be feeling like, hey, we got to get this ball rolling. Because here's the thing. Tigers, Royals, and Guardians, they're not playing the greatest ball right now, but they're all 500 or better, and they're not going to let up. So they can ill afford to fall too much further behind here, the Twins. And I think we might see some drastic moves soon if they don't turn this around relatively quickly here in the next, three, four series.
Padres right now with 13 wins, 2-game lead in terms of the win column for March-April bettors. Padres were 28-1 pre-flop, 28-1. To win March-April. So congratulations, at least right now. Still a long way to go. 16 more days of baseball, 17 more before that is settled. Paul, thank you as always. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Gil. Take care.
Paul Spohr at Spohr. We'll come back. Wes Reynolds, his thoughts on the Masters and the majors moving forward.
The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course, SiriusXM Channel 158. It's Gil Alexander, it's Kelly Midland, producer number nine, so much more than a producer. Alongside, live from Circa Resort Casino, downtown Las Vegas, still to come this hour alone, Wes Reynolds. Standing by, we'll talk NFL draft as well. The NFL draft, 10 days away.
10 days away.
It's unbelievable.
Sorry, I'm looking up WrestleMania ticket prices. This is insane, Gil.
We got to get to that momentarily with Wes. We get tweets at Beating the Book. James Sott, any fun futures for Stuttgart and or Barcelona?
Said
Castellano. Also not a golf fan, but watching Rory walking through the crowd after he won was pretty emotional. Great hit, guys. Thank you. Iga's plus money at a tournament that she has won multiple times. Give me that. I saw a plus 140, but I'm told there's a plus 175 out there on her somewhere. MGM. J-Rod was all over it, but I'll be on Iga in Stuttgart. Jason H11. Hey, Kelly, be careful when criticizing the traditions of the Masters tournament. They can take away your viewing rights if you say anything negative.
Yeah, my app's not working all of a sudden. Weird.
Kevin Ryan. Gil, oh, this is the reason. Gil, no amateur made the cut, hence no presentation. Chance Copperpot. Masters almost felt like Super Bowl 49. That's the one where Malcolm Butler picks off Russell Wilson at the goal line. The Seahawks decide to pass the football. He says, only difference is Rory threw it out of the back of the end zone instead of right at Butler. He lived to fight another down and won the Masters. That was a comparison. And Jeff Holdorf backs it up. He says, in order for the low amateur to get to the Butler cabin ceremony, they were required to make the cut. All five amateurs failed to make the cut, so no soup for Justin Hastings. Seems odd, though. Low amateur is still the low amateur, he says.
Yeah.
I'm with you, Jeff.
I agree. Like that, you're still the low amateur.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense.
S.N. Wright, Stephen N. Wright. as a Southern man, your Southern man imitation is getting better with each passing each passing Masters, a tradition like no other. Kelly called Kelly called Rory first on the air.
Or you heard it first, but yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Good for you. And then
I was on Rory all week, yeah.
Jeff Holdorf. Rory on the great reset after missing the putt on 18 to go to the playoff. His caddy and dear friend Harry says to Rory as they hop on the court, "Well, we would have definitely taken this position on Monday." The perfect words. That's right. He did say that. Absolutely right. Wes Reynolds joins us now, the glue that holds this whole operation together, Long Shots co-host and a man who has authored many a golf future for cashing, joins us now courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. How you doing, Wes?
I'm doing well, Gil. How are you?
I'm doing very well. First things first, before we get to golf, Kelly just brought it up. WrestleMania. I know this is near and dear to your heart. Are you paying? What is the cost of this now?
I just looked up for what a single ticket, because it is here in Las Vegas this weekend, Saturday night. $471 is the cheapest ticket I can find on Ticketmaster right now.
$471.
You can sit upper deck for $1,000.
Oh, sweet. They do know it's fake, right? They're aware of that?
You got to be careful, man. I tell you, one of the first things I learned in sports radio is how many dudes who work in sports radio are obsessed with wrestling.
Speaking of one, Wes Reynolds. Wes, are you pumped for WrestleMania or not so much?
I am actually not all that pumped for WrestleMania because of what you mentioned, the ticket prices being exorbitant. And I really don't think the build has been all that great for the card. And now WrestleMania, it's not just one night. It's now two nights where you have full cards and you have full pre-shows. And it's a long night. Like it is a long night of sports entertainment or pro wrestling. I'm not a sports entertainment guy. I'm a wrestling fan, Gil.
There you go.
That hell with all this new nomenclature and this corporate BS.
Hey Wes, who's currently the most entertaining wrestler out there? Like if I was just checking in on the WWE, are we still in the WWE? Or WWF. If I was just checking in for the first time, who's the most entertaining guy out there?
Well, the guy that's in the main event, the guy that's a champion, is one Cody Rhodes, who is the son of the American Dream, the late great American Dream, Dusty Rhodes. And that was the whole allure of last year's card. He's got to finish the story, you know, and finally win the championship. Well, now he has it. And it's like, the storylines just aren't as fresh this year. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of people here, though. I'll be interested to see what the final numbers are. If travel has been reportedly been slightly down, at least in Las Vegas to start the year. So we shall see, but there'll be stuff everywhere. There'll be shows around town. There'll be conventions all over town. You can do meet and greets and pay a lot of money to get autographs. I do not do that. So I don't know what my WrestleMania plan is going to be. Maybe I'll wait and see if those ticket prices drop.
When I was a kid, there was this guy, St. Jones. Are you familiar with this, Kelly?
Nope.
St. Jones was this wrestler, and his fights would always follow the same script. He would be getting crushed, and then he would mount this unbelievable comeback, and I'd be going crazy watching it. We had it like Saturday mornings on TV, and then he would get crushed at the end. It was the same thing, and I got snookered into it every time.
Special Delivery Jones.
Yes.
he was like what they call a higher level, the term jobber or enhancement talent. And what that means is the guy that goes out there and loses and puts over like the big stars on the show.
I was devastated every time.
Is The Undertaker still wrestling? Because I feel like he's been wrestling for like 40 years. He's the only one I feel like I still know.
He is not. He is now officially retired, but I'm sure he will be in town in full Undertaker gear at some point.
All right, Wes, give me just forget betting for a second. Give me your historical perspective on this round yesterday. As far as final rounds of Masters and Majors in general go, where does that rank for you in terms of drama?
Well, it's going to be hard to be topped with what we saw yesterday. And we knew if and when Rory finally accomplished this, if and when he finally won the career Grand Slam, we knew it wasn't going to be boring. we knew it wasn't going to be like, okay, he's just going to run away with it. Because I think at one point in the round, he got up five shots and people were doing the Vince Carter gifts. It's over, you know, like he did in the dunk contest. I was like, no, it's not. Something's going to happen. I have been down this road before. We have all been down this road before. So something was going to happen. What happened was he did a practical thing and laid up on 13 and then hit one of the worst wedges that you ever saw right into the water. So I think this has to be up there, certainly with the 1986 when Jack won at age 46 and the Vern Lundquist yes sir call,
yes,
where he hits that putt on 16 and the 2019, of course, Tiger emerging from that large pack. I think we actually watched that together, if I recall, 1 year, Gil,
yes,
at a sports book here in town. That's where, right, Tiger came in, Molinari hits it in the creek, and the floodgates open. And there's Tiger Woods there at the end. So, yeah, that certainly had a lot of drama. And then you would look at Watson and Sink at Turnberry for the Open when Watson was 60 years old and we thought he was actually going to win the Open Championship. Did not happen. But this is certainly at least top five for me.
And you, so if we can get a window into the mind of Wes Reynolds, you did not, correct me if I'm wrong here, you did not have Rory pre-flop, but you got in on him live Thursday and Friday. What was it for you? I believe you did Thursday and Friday. Friday, we get it. But if you did it Thursday, what was it about Thursday where you were like, I'm taking this now?
Yeah, I guess I have the distinction of having the worst number on Rory McIlroy at the network, Gil. I did not get what you guys got because I was waiting to see what kind of start he got off to, because that's what's held Rory back at the Masters. I had a top 10 going in and I was like, yeah, I'm going to have some kind of piece of him. I just want to know when to time it right. And I timed it totally wrong because I played it after the front nine on Thursday, where he got up to a 3-under start. It's like, okay, this is what he's been waiting for. Because if you go back since 2019, he was 7 back of the leader. Then the next year, he was 10 back of the leader. Then he was 11 back of the leader. Then he was 6 back. Then he was 7 back. Then he was 6 back. And this is of the first round leader. So it's like he gets 3-under and then he's 4-under in the fairway on the 15th. It's like, okay, just get it up and down. He's going to birdie. He's going to be 5-under. And who knows how he's going to finish the round. Then that chip goes in the water. He ends up making 2 double bogeys. And what do you know? He's 7 back again of the first round leader in this case, which was Justin Rose. So I did not add more on Friday. I was just like, you know what? Here we go again. I don't want to add necessarily anymore, but Rory at the Masters has been kind of like me sometimes, and maybe other bettors as well, on a college football Saturday or a big college basketball Saturday where you lose a couple in that early window. And you start out like 0-2 or 0-3, and then you got to play catch up over the week, the rest of the card. And that's what Rory has had to do at the Masters. And sure enough, he finally did it here. So, yeah, I only got in at 4-1 on Thursday. But, you know, sometimes you lose with the best of the number and sometimes you win with the worst of it. And I was the latter with,
yeah,
Rory.
When if he doesn't do that on 15 and 17 in round one, I go from, you know, I just win the one bet before the tournament. And then because he does that, it turns out to be a monster tournament, right? Because the opportunity, for me anyway, because it just creates these opportunities that wouldn't have existed otherwise. Does this now, because now everybody's brain sort of toggles to, okay, the monkey's off his back with the Masters. He's got the career slam on his 11th try. Now he's got Quail Hollow for the PGA where he's won multiple times, 4 times. He's got the Open Championship in his backyard. Is this a 2 or 3 major kind of year for him?
It could very well be because we know, I think, like, time is on his side. He's only 35. He's still in relatively good health because I remember years ago when Brooks won his 5th major, you're like, can he win 10 majors? And I lean toward the no just because of the amount of other players out there and plus injuries. And we didn't even know LIV was going to be created at that point. But look, I think he can. But the biggest battle he's got to fight besides the injuries is complacency. You know, now he's finally done it. He's been trying to do this for 11 years. Now he's finally won the career Grand Slam. He could sit at the table with Jack and Tiger and Gary Player and Hogan, the whole 9 yards. Can he fight that complacency? Does he have that drive to say, you know what, I want more. I want to get 10 majors. I want to be one of only four players to ever do it. So it very well could be, but it just, does the complacency set in?
I hear Jim Nance in my ear saying, and Gene Sarazen as well, Wes, as well.
Gene Sarazen, yes. Right. I don't want to forget Gene.
More with Wes on the other side. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.